You're listening to Score Evenings, weeknights 6 to 9.
You know, right now, the focus would be on adding pitching depth. I think that would be the clear thing. And I think we're in the information gathering process still. I think, as I've said a number of times, there's still very few teams that I think would be fully categorized as sellers. I think that for the most part right now, it's the teams that have struggled still think they can kind of get back in the race other than a handful. And so we're not quite there yet. But, you know, in the information gathering stage, you know, obviously checking in, monitoring everything.
Here's Cubs president of baseball operations, Jed Hoyer, just a few weeks ago talking about what they'll be looking for on the trade market. Hour three of the Score Evening Show with yours truly, Rami Makhlouf, live from the Hyundai Score Studios and brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. If you missed Mark Eversley, Bulls GM with Mully and Haw this morning, bring you a good chunk of that coming up at about 8:20. But joining me now on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Download the Circa Sports app today is Odyssey MLB insider Bob Nightingale. Insider calls are presented by Grainger. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers the professional grade products you need delivered when and where you need them. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Bob Nightingale, how are you this evening, sir?
Yeah, doing great. How about yourself?
Good. And you, Jed Hoyer there sort of touched on what you touched on in your latest article. I was reading at usatoday.com just earlier this afternoon. I was under the of the line of thought that this could be a very active trade deadline because there are a lot of teams that expected to contend, who have good players that other teams would want between now and the trade deadline, and it might actually be kind of a buyer's market and lots of teams selling. But reading your latest article, and I quote, you say we could be in for a sleeper of a deadline.
Yeah, when you look at the standings, there's only six teams that are definitely sellers right now out of the 30. So, you know, who's going to – it's definitely going to be a seller's market because there's a – you know, nobody's really out of the race with the extra wild card. You know, you start to have teams that say, you know, like the old days with only, you know, three division winners and one wild card. You know, no one's ready to give up. Now, that could change the next 5 weeks because you have teams on the bubble, you know, like Arizona Diamondbacks, yeah. Cincinnati Reds, you know, that sort of thing. But, right now it's a – you know, who's ever got some commodities, like some, you know, particularly pitching, you know, people are going to be jumping all over it. There's not that many guys to go around.
Yeah, and pitching is always what every contending team is after leading up to the trade deadline. But like you said, there are a lot of bubble teams, and I'm just reeling off some of the teams that I'm looking at the standings right now that I would consider bubble teams. You got Boston and Baltimore in the AL East, Kansas City. I would think Minnesota is one of those bubble teams that you're talking about right now. You can make a case that three of the teams in the AL West are bubble teams, and that's just in the American League. Could you see this turning from what you are thinking is a seller's market here on June 26th to becoming a buyer's market by July 31st if enough of these teams sort of bubbles burst?
I don't see becoming a buyer's market, just because I just can't see that many teams just surrendering. We've seen too many teams come back from the dead and done great things. Look at the Texas Rangers here. They won the World Series 2 years ago. Looked like they had no chance. Next thing you know, they're running the table in October, winning every single road game, and they're World Series champs. So, a few of those bubble teams will say, you know what, it's not worth it. We don't think we're going to pull it off, so let's go ahead and sell. But I guess there's going to be enough of those teams to say, all right, it's going to be a buyer's market.
Talking with Bob Nightingale of USA Today here on the Score Evening Show. Staying right here in the NL Central and the team that the Cubs saw today, just split a four-game series with the St. Louis Cardinals. That was a team that I think most people, including their front office, thought would be sellers by the time the trade deadline rolled around before this season got going. And they got a couple of guys. Ryan Helsley, their closer, is one guy who's rumored to eventually end up on the trade block. Do you think they've done enough to convince the front office that they can stay in the mix here, if not in the NL Central, then in the wild card?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no way they'll buy because they're not, especially a rebuilding season. So the best they can do is say, you know what, we'll stay pat. But even then, I can't see Ryan Helsley staying there too many teams want him and Eric Fetty. They would love to see Sonny Gray or Miles Mikolas. We had their no trades, but they're, you know, doesn't look like they're going to do that. But no, they're not. You know, they don't. It's almost like the old movie Major League, where they're the players are winning despite the front office, and this is what's going on now. So I still think they sell. I really do. At best, they stay pat.
A couple of the names that I've heard, I'll just take them one by one, that I've heard the Cubs to be rumored to be interested in, and one is Marlins starter Sandy Alcantara, who in 2022 won the Cy Young Award. Now he's recovering from Tommy John surgery, and it's been sort of a rough start to his season. He has locked in his last four starts. Do you think the price is as high for him as it was prior to Tommy John surgery? Are the Marlins asking for as much?
It's still going to be very high, because the beauty about him is you get him for 2.5 years. It's not just a rental. And, he started to slow, and I think people are saying, wait a minute now, how much do we really want to give up for this guy? But he's kind of starting to get back to his old self again. I think he's got like a 2.74 ERA in June in his four starts. So, and he's got a cheap contract too. So you're going to have everybody in the world after this guy. He's the he's the number one fish out there. People really want this guy.
What about Keller from the Pirates, another guy who I've seen the Cubs sort of tied to in rumors? Do you think he's a more realistic possibility if you're the Cubs and shopping for a pitcher?
Yeah, I mean, he's still got like over $50 million left in that contract, and he's solid. I know he's 1-10 with a 4 ERA, but not getting any run support at all. Give me a chance for the Pirates to get, you know, out on that contract. And, you know, they're rebuilding anyway. So he's a steady guy, and he's sort of giving you innings. You know, he's a guy that, you know, might be a number three starter in the postseason for you, you know, not a number one or two. But, yeah, he'd be a nice fit for any team that says, you know what, we got some money, and we take on that contract. We don't have to give up much in prospects.
Talk with Bob Nightingale of USA Today here on the Score Evening Show. Do you think that's more the route the Cubs are likely to go in the mold of like a Matthew Boyd and a Jameson Taillon? These guys who are good elsewhere, but the Cubs sort of, and I think Keller fits that mold. The Cubs, they see something and they're like, we can unlock that guy and get a little bit more out of him. Do you think that's a more realistic target that Cubs fans should be looking at than a Sandy Alcantara, who obviously has all the arm talent in the world that everybody can obviously see?
Yeah, I just don't think they want to unload the farm system for Alcantara. So, yeah, as someone like Keller makes a lot of sense. You go or go get an Nathan Eovaldi from the Orioles. You know, he's a big-game pitcher. He's done well. He's going to be, you know, available as long as the Orioles are out of it. So he'd be a nice fit, too. So there's enough of those guys in expiring contracts. I like the two guys from Arizona, Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly. Particularly Kelly's really pitching well. So, you know, those guys are expiring contracts. You don't have to give up, you know, much at all in those situations. So, yeah, I think those guys are more of a fit because, you know, let's face it, they just gave away a great, great young prospect in Cam Smith with the Astros, who's, you know, suddenly he's untouchable. I mean, no one thought that he was going to jump up and do what he's doing for the Astros, and they got those guys in first place.
You know, you beat me to it. The next question was going to be about those two pitchers from Arizona, and I didn't realize it until I think it was in your article pointing out that they're still in the mix for that National League wild card. That's one of those bubble teams that you're talking about, and two games over 500. I think they're not on a lot of people's radars as somebody who's on that bubble or in the mix for a playoff spot, because that National League West is just so dang good right now, Bob.
Oh, it really is. I mean, Giants are starting to come back to earth a little bit here, but, you know, Padres are still very solid, and, of course, the Dodgers are juggernaut. But you're absolutely right. You know, what hurts the Diamondbacks, they're so hurt. You know, they lost their two co-closers, A.J. Puck and Martinez. They're out for the year. Obviously, Corbin Burns spent $202 million. You know, he had Tommy John surgery, Jordan Montgomery, and even, their best player, you know, Corbin Carroll. You know, who's a, unbelievable young outfielder. When people compare Pete Crow Armstrong and compare to him, just because Carroll is that same type of player, just that dynamic guy. And he's on the injured list. So we'll see how long the Diamondbacks can tread water here for the next 5 weeks.
Speaking of that NL West, I've heard whispers that the Padres could be sellers between now and the trade deadline, Bob. That seems a little crazy to me for a team that's 8 games over .500 in the driver's seat for a wild card spot, and just as young and talented a roster as you'll find in Major League Baseball, right? I felt like they were building not just for this year, but to be around for years to come. I can't see them being, I'd like to see them being sellers just to make it more of a buyer's market for the Cubs, but can't see the Padres being sellers between now and July 31st.
No, I think there's a 0% chance of that. You're absolutely right. And they're built to win now. I mean, Dylan Cease, a free agent after this year. So is Michael King. Hey, there's, you know, they're drawing 44,000 fans a game. There's no way in the world they can give up after, you know, putting all these resources in the team, you know, doing that Soto trade a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And now the only people back. So no, I think there's zero chance they're going to sell. I really do. I think they're going to buy.
Bring it back to the Cubs here, and I was asking before I brought you on, I was asking Cubs fans, because about a month ago, and in that same press conference that we heard Jed Hoyer coming out of the break, he said, you know, it's a pretty nice luxury that we're not looking for any everyday position players, that we got those locked down and we're in the market for pitching. And at the time, that looked to be the case. Matt Shaw and his bat has cooled off a little bit at third base again. It looks as bad as it did when he was sent down to AAA earlier this season. But the glove is better. Do you think the glove is enough that the Cubs aren't looking to get another bat at third base this year? Or do you think things have changed since Jed Hoyer said that?
I think they're looking around. You got to look around. You know, when you have a rookie like that, you don't want to just, you know, count on him saying, okay, he's going to be fine down the stretch and, you know, lead us in a deep October. So, you know, a guy like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa from the Pittsburgh Pirates, very steady guy, and, you know, only making $8 million, so probably about $3.5 million in the books, and he's a free agent. So you don't have to give up much to get him at all. So I could see guys like that. I mean, sure, they'd love to have Eugenio Suarez from the Arizona Diamondbacks, a premier power hitter. You know, shoot, he's on pace for about 50 home runs, about 140 ribbies. So a guy like that, same thing. It just, since they only got a few months left in contract, you don't have to give up much. So I do think that, you know, not a pressing need, but I do think they have third base in the back of their mind for sure.
While I have you here, let me ask you about the team on the other side of town, the White Sox, and obviously the name that comes up for the Sox whenever you're talking about their activity leading up to the trade deadline revolves around Luis Robert, who is not having his best season, but I feel like it's time to pull the trigger on a Luis Robert trade, whatever the value is that they're going to get for him. Would you agree?
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, they should have moved him during the winter. You know, I understand what the logic was, like, okay, let's hope he comes out to a good start, stays healthy, we'll get more value. No, that has not happened. So even if they have to eat some money in the contract and dump him for a fringe prospect, they got no choice because they're not going to give him a qualifying offer. So you're not going to get a draft pick out of it anyway. So no, I think he's definitely gone. You know, they badly need him to play well here last 4 or 5 weeks just to get some decent value from him.
That's Bob Nightingale joining me on the Circus Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. And Bob joins us courtesy of Grainger. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers the professional grade products you need delivered where and when you need them. Call, click Grainger.com. Or just stop by, and you can find Bob on Twitter, obviously, at B Nightingale, and links to all his fine work for USA Today over there. Bob, really appreciate the time and the insight, sir. Stay well.
My pleasure. Have a great evening. Thank you.
That's Bob Nightingale of USA Today and our Odyssey Baseball Insider. I did want to update you guys while we're talking Cubs and before we switch gears and hear from Mark Eversley, the Bulls GM, here in just a couple minutes with Mully and Haw. We are in phase two now of the Major League Baseball voting, and we are now to the finalists. And I'm looking at the American League, checking the American League. No White Sox.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. I'm sorry to disappoint. Sorry. My bad.
Well, let me put the breaking news banner.
But On the National League side of things, two names who you probably expected to be there, to be finalists among outfielders, Pete Crow Armstrong and Kyle Tucker, both in the mix. Pete Crow Armstrong, third in voting in the National League, behind only Freddie Freeman and Will Smith, the catcher from the Dodgers. Not the getting jiggy with it, Will Smith. Have you heard his new song, Adam? Have you heard Will Smith's new song?
I wasn't aware he was making new music, so no.
You should stay not aware. You should stay okay. Not aware of that.
I think I tuned out after Will.i.am.
Yeah, it's a midlife crisis in rap formation.
Oh,
so
no.
I would highly recommend you not.
Let's go back to making action movies, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But like I said, Will Smith is the leader in the entire National League. He has the most votes in the National League right now. But the other catcher who's a finalist, your very own Chicago Cubs catcher, Carson Kelly, seeking his first career Midsummer Classic selection. And I know it's not like... it's not the sexiest vote to get Carson Kelly in there, but man, he deserves to at the very least be one of these two finalists, and his story is absolutely awesome. And yes, the bat has kind of died down, especially since Miguel Amaya went on the injured list, and he's had to carry more of that load at the catcher position. But I was really happy to see that Carson Kelly was in there. The weird thing is, and I don't know if it's just not in this email, this press release that I got from Major League Baseball. So for the American League, they have two designated hitter finalists listed. It's Ryan O'Hearn of the Orioles and Ben Rice of the Yankees. I don't see, and I'll do a little dig and hit the old Google machine here during the break. I don't see any designated hitters for the National League listed in among these finalists.
Oh, okay. So Shohei Ohtani's going to be the D. I saw this earlier. Shohei Ohtani's going to be the DH for the NL because he got the most fan votes. So he's locked in as the DH.
Okay. He's locked in. He's not even a finalist. He is the DH then?
Yes. I saw that just like an hour ago. I saw that.
Oh, okay. I will go into, not that I don't trust you, Adam, but I want to see exactly how and why that is the case and verify during the break.
Because he had the most fan votes or something like that.
Okay. Well, good. Because I was going to say, if he's not at the very least a finalist, that's insanity. Because Seiya Suzuki is having a monster season. And it kind of, I know it's gotten mentioned more and more here of late, but it's kind of flown under the radar because of how good Kyle Tucker and PCA have been. Some people aren't quite grasping how great a season that Seiya Suzuki is having right now as a DH, and he deserves to be an all-star. So I'm glad to hear that.
So here's the explanation. This is from MLB's Twitter account. Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani earned automatic bids as the top vote-getters in each league. So those two are in.
Awesome. Nice. Outstanding. I'm glad. Well-deserved. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that, Adam. We'll hit a quick break. On the other side, Mark Eversley, the GM of the Chicago Bulls. He joined Mully and Hall this morning and tried to explain where exactly this thing is headed after making their first draft pick of Noah Asenge last night out of France. We'll hear from the Bulls GM with Mully and Hall right after this. It's Rami Makhlouf. It's the Score Evening Show, and back in just a few minutes.
You played pro ball in Germany 4 days ago, and now you're being drafted. Can you describe this week?
I mean, that's just an amazing week. You know, I played like final 4 days ago. Right now I'm a draft like by legendary franchise from Chicago Bulls. That's just like an amazing week.
Courtesy of ESPN, Bulls first round pick, Noah Asenge, excited to be a Bull, excited to be a pro at the NBA level. Rami Makhlouf with you until 9 o'clock here on the Score Evening Show. Adam Studzinski on the other side of the glass on the ones and twos. Did you play Will Smith coming out on
purpose?
You know
I did. Yeah.
Nice. All right.
That was not an accident.
Sometimes it's just a happy coincidence. You know, it's what's next in the rotation. But that's good producing right there. Not surprised. Adam Studzinski doing some fine producing on the show this evening. On the morning show today, Mullion-Haw had a chance to speak with Bulls general manager Mark Eversley, who, as I said earlier in the show, he's the new face. He's the new mouthpiece for this basketball team because Arturis Karnišovas apparently bombed too many press conferences and interviews. They're like, let's send somebody else out there to headline this thing. And so now it's Mark Eversley who joined Mullion-Haw this morning. And let's first hear what he has to say about Noah Senge, the first round pick, and what are the timelines and expectations for his rookie year?
You know, I'm not a coach. Our job is to select players and hand them over to the coaches. I think for us, you know, we're going to work in collaboration with our coaches and put together, you know, a player development plan for him both on and off the court. You know, I don't think it's fair for me to put any kind of timelines on or expectations on the kid this quickly. I think when you look at what Modest did last year, I think if you go back and look at the first, you know, 41 games, Modest was, he kind of got time here and there, a little bit of sprinkle time here and there, and you know, it wasn't until after the All-Star break to where he really, you know, found his groove and found, you know, he was able to adapt to the speed of the game, the quickness of the game, the physicality of the game. You know, our hope is that Noah has a similar path, but if he doesn't, you know, that's going to be okay. I think he's the person who will determine when and if he earns minutes, and it's really on him. We're going to create an environment here in this building to where, you know, he'll be able to come in here every single day, work on his body, work on his game. And, you know, he'll determine, you know, if and when he plays and how much he plays.
I get that. And that's the answer to that question. But wouldn't hurt to, like, just lie to me. You know what I mean? Like Chris Rock once said, lie to me, Jerry. Just lie. Get us excited. Like, yeah, we expect this guy to contribute this. We know he's only 18. We see high upside. We expect this guy to contribute. It's just give me something. And that was the most don't have expectations for this guy answer that you could have given. Now, Senge comes from the German league, which I don't know about you guys out there. I don't know much about Bundesliga basketball. But Eversley says it's comparable to something that we might be a little bit more familiar with.
You know, I think a fair comparison is something similar to the G League, and I use that comparison because it's mostly men. You know, they're no longer college kids.
Right.
You know, and that's what really attracted us to Noah was here's an 18-year-old playing against men every single night, practicing against men every single night, and he had a ton of success, and that was extremely attractive to us. No different than when, you know, you look back a year, you know, Modest spending, you know, his time with G League Ignite. He was playing against men every single night. So there's similarities. Obviously, you know, I don't know exactly. You can't compare them exactly, but there's a lot of similarities in that, you know, they're both playing against men every single night.
And he expounded on that a little bit, saying that part of the attraction to Senge was this guy's already kind of a pro.
And it's part of the attraction as to why we selected him last night. The first time I saw him play live for Ulm was last October. He was 17 years old.
Wow.
And Ulm played a preseason game against the Portland Trailblazers. Interesting story, and I'll try and be brief, but they flew from Istanbul two nights before. Their plane got diverted to Seattle. They jumped on a bus and drove 3 hours from Seattle to Portland, got to the hotel, quickly changed, drove over to the Moda Center. We got to watch them practice for 2 hours. They went full out, went back to the hotel, slept, and played the next night, got on a plane that night, and flew back home to Germany. And for me, to watch those kids, especially Noah, in that environment for 48 hours, and the resiliency, toughness, just, it was super, super impressive.
I watched some of the highlights of that preseason game last year where their team played the Blazers in a preseason game, and it was, because why not? I need to learn about Noah Senge. But it was an impressive showing, even though it was just a preseason game. And when he lays out all the circumstances and the context of that game, what they had to go through just to get there, that much more impressive. And that does raise an eyebrow for me. Now the guys, Mullion Hawe with Mark Eversley, in case you're just joining us, they got into more big picture stuff, both when it comes to the Eastern Conference, which is a little bit more wide open than I think a lot of people thought it would be when the playoffs started, and what the Bulls' approach would be with that being taken into consideration.
I think the approach we're going to take is, you know, similar to how you, you know, introduced it, was we're going to take a little longer approach. I think we're going to be a little more pragmatic in terms of our decision making. You know, the East is what it is. And, you know, you look at a team like Detroit who, you know, the year prior, you know, they made a big jump last year. Indiana made a huge jump this year and making it to the finals. We observe all those things, but we don't let it dictate how we're going to operate. We've got a plan in place. We want to stick to that plan. We don't want to skip steps. And, you know, it's not to say we won't be opportunistic. If there's something that makes a lot of sense that we can jump at and we feel, you know, it's a good move for the ball club, then we'll do it. But we're going to stick to our plan. We're going to be pragmatic. We're going to be really thoughtful on how we operate. And, you know, we'll keep an eye on the league and monitor things as they go.
What is the plan? This is what I keep coming back to. And I talked about this earlier in the show when we played his comments from his press conference last night about this being a transition, this being they're in a transition phase. They seem to always be in a transition phase. They're at some point it has to transition to something else. What is the plan? You're telling us there is a plan. You seem pretty convinced of it, but nobody can see what the plan is and how you eventually get back to relevance, if not contending. What is the plan?
The plan is to transition from the play-in game to the sixth seed and lose in five games to the one seed. Or I guess it would be the three seed, whatever.
Yeah, but I would take that. That's a legit step in the right direction, Adam. I would not what we're looking for, but that is a legitimate step in the right direction. And honestly, the way that the NBA playoffs played out this year, weren't the Pacers a six seed? Weren't the Timberwolves a six seed in the Western Conference Finals? Like, being a six seed would be significant. But they constantly seem to be transitioning from a transition phase to another transition phase to another transition phase. It never transitions into something actually relevant.
So the Pacers were the four seed in the East.
Four. My bad.
The Timberwolves were the six seed in the West.
Okay, but if a four seed and a six seed can get to the finals and to the Eastern Conference or to the Western Conference Finals, this league is more wide open than it's been in a long time. And yet still, even with that being the case, the Bulls can't stumble into relevancy. They keep telling us there's this plan, and nobody sees the plan. And there are never any results or fruits of the labor of the plan. Don't tell me there's a plan and continually not pay it off. That'd be like, I just got married on Saturday. If I just kept on telling my then fiance, now wife, look, I got a plan. We're going to be married. I promise. Someday we're going to be married. I got a plan. But it never paid off. I would be single right now. That would have never happened. You can't just tell people you have a plan and have nothing in place that at least if you're not going to tell them what the plan is, where we can see it. Like, oh, okay, that's the plan. They don't want to show all their cards, but we see where this thing is going. There's no plan. There is no plan unless the plan is to stay mediocre.
What if the plan is to have no plan? And that way they remain unpredictable to the rest of the league.
There it is.
If they can't predict what their next move is, then nobody else can.
Like that episode of It's Always Sunny. You need a wild card.
Yes, exactly.
You gotta have a wild card.
You need someone to cut the brakes.
Exactly. The Bulls are just trying to be that wild card. Now, the other question that's hanging over the Bulls this offseason is Josh Giddey and his contract situation. And Julian Hough asked Mark Eversley about that as well.
So when the right time comes up, we'll reach out to his representatives and, you know, we'll start to talk about what the future looks like with Josh. And like you said, his second half of the season was terrific. It's a small peek into a window of, you know, why we traded for him. After the deadline, you know, there was more opportunity and he did a great job seizing the moment. And, you know, he's been terrific for us, especially the second half of the season. We hope he's with us long term. And when the opportunity presents itself, we'll reach out to his representation and begin those discussions.
This is how not clear the Bulls' plan is. I don't even know what I want them to do with Josh Giddey. I legitimately don't know what I don't know what the plan is, and so I don't know if Josh Giddey can be part of the plan. I don't know how big a part of this thing they expect him to be. Josh Giddey is a good player, and he did take a step forward last year, especially after the Zach LaVine trade. And so part of me goes, yeah, that guy could be a player on a contending or a relevant NBA team, but are the Bulls that? Does it make sense for them to pay him that money right now where they're at in whatever phase of the plan that they're in right now? And are they expecting him to be too big a part of that plan? Because I do think there are limits on the role Josh Giddey can play. Like, you need at least two or three players better than Josh Giddey if you're going to be a relevant team and a contending team on any level. So, A, if you pay Josh Giddey this money, will you see a payoff in terms of this team being something at some point in the course of that contract that they give him? And B, who are you putting around Josh Giddey that paying him that money makes sense and that you're putting together a puzzle that actually adds up to a contending or relevant NBA team? I'm completely lost on what they should do with Josh Giddey. I don't know.
You know what this whole thing has actually just reminded me of, Rami, is I don't know how familiar you are with South Park.
Yeah, but, I love South Park.
Okay, so you know the underpants gnomes where they have their plan laid out? Like, step yeah. one, steal underpants. Step two, step three, profit. So that's what the Bulls are doing. Step one, transition phase. Step two,
win.
Step three, win.
That is a great analogy. Yeah, the Bulls are the underpants gnomes of the NBA. That's a perfect analogy, Adam Studzinski. Well done. Well done. We'll hit a quick break and wrap this thing up. A little more Cubs talk to sneak in there before we wrap up the Score Evening Show with me, Rami Makhlouf, and Adam Studzinski right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Score Evenings, weeknight 6 till 9.
Just how we kind of controlled the environment. You know, nothing looked like he'd been out there, you know, every single start. And I think there's a tendency to get a little overamped in a start like that. And I thought he controlled his effort level really well, his energy really well, and that caused a lot of really good execution.
There's Cubs manager Craig Counsell talking about Shota Imanaga, who came back from the injury list today and in fine form. 5 innings, 1 hit. No runs, no walks, no strikeouts either, but you will take that. I'm sorry, he had 3 strikeouts and 1 walk. I was looking at Caleb Thielbar's line there, who came in for 1 1/3 innings of relief of no hits, no walks, no strikeouts. But yeah, that's huge that they get him back. You won't be getting Justin Steele back this year, although I heard a couple of days ago he does throw it out there that he might come back for the postseason, but he's not. He might be a little ahead of schedule, but he's not pulling off a Kyle Schwarber and showing up unexpectedly for a playoff game in October. So huge that you got Shota Imanaga back, and they'll need to add to that pitching staff. They don't have enough there right now. At least one starter, and every team that's trying to make the playoffs is looking at relievers. So they'll have a lot of competition on the trade market for arms, both starters and relievers. But I came across what I thought, and it's a little bit, it's a little, they only let me on the air once or twice a week, which I appreciate every time that they do. So you might have heard about this already. It's a little over a week old, but The Athletic, Neil Payne over at The Athletic, he put together a list of, I guess you would call them, qualifiers that basically every World Series team halfway through the year meet these thresholds, if you know what I mean. And only five teams meet all these thresholds, so one of these five teams, according to the data and according to history, should win the World Series this year. The title is ranked History That Says One of These Five Teams Should Win the World Series. And here they are. I'll run through them quickly. Rank among the top 13 in two of these three categories: win percentage, run differential, and wins above replacement. 25 of the last 26 champs have led into a rank in the top 13 in two of those three categories. Factor two: rank among the top 17 in OBP or top 11 in slugging. Again, 25 of the last 26 champs have met that criteria. Factor three: rank among the top 11 in opponent batting average or top 16 in WHIP. Once again, 25 of 26 champs have met that criteria. Factor four: rank among the top 13 in quality starts or fewest meltdowns. Only 24 of the last 26 World Series champions have met that bar. Factor five, and I know this is a lot, and you're probably in your car, so try to follow along. Check off at least four of these five: top 11 in lowest batting average on balls in play, top 20 in batting clutch, top 20 in the fewest home runs per nine, top 25 in lowest batting strikeout rate, top 25 in speed score. 24 of the last 25 champs checked off those five boxes. So with those criteria, like I said, only five teams are left that check off all those boxes and therefore should win the World Series. And would you believe me if I told you that along with the Astros, the Padres, the Tigers, and the Yankees, the Cubs round out that top five of teams that should win the World Series? And I know a lot. First of all, you might have gotten lost in all that. I understand. I get it. It was a lot to follow, especially over the radio. It's not like I can put graphics up on the screen for you. But I know also you might just be rolling your eyes. Like, what does that even mean? You're grasping at straws here for hope that the Cubs will win a World Series this year. But I put a lot of weight in that. That you considered, well, Neil Payne considered that many factors and did that much digging. And the fact that we're talking about 24, 25 of the last 26 World Series champs checked off all those boxes. To me, that's relevant. It's real. And I think it's also just a good indicator that this is a really good baseball team. That if you had any doubt after the first, I don't know, 90 games or so that they've played, if you had any doubt, the fact that you can check off that many boxes in that many categories, whether you're talking about hitting for power, hitting for average, pitching, speed, whatever the case might be. There are no fielding metrics in there of everything that I just read, and the Cubs are one of the best fielding teams on top of it, so you can throw that in there as well. The fact that they check off this many boxes tells me that this is legitimately a real good baseball team and are in the conversation for a World Series. If the record didn't do it for you, I mean, they have the third best record in baseball after losing 5 of 6 before taking the last two against the St. Louis Cardinals. And you want to go back a little bit further, they've been struggling a little bit for the last 2 or 3 weeks and still have the third best record in baseball. But I know there are times where I look at it and go, are they really this good? And you might do the same. They are. They 100% are that good. And hopefully they get even better between now and the trade deadline. That music means I need to go. My thanks to Will Gottlieb of CHGO Bulls, who joined me to talk about Noah Esenge and where the Bulls go from here. Alex Cohen, Cubs play-by-play broadcaster on Marquee Sports. And Bob Nightingale of USA Today, Major League Baseball columnist. If you missed any of that or anything on today's show, 670score.com or use the handy-dandy rewind feature on the Odyssey app. Next time I know if I'm on the air, I'll be hosting with Mully July 7th on The Morning Show. Till then, for Adam Studzinski, Rami Makhlouf saying thanks for listening to The Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Enjoy it, and I'll enjoy being off in mid-April. I don't give a damn.